How is ministering going in your ward? Has the excitement worn off? Do you find that you still can't motivate those you lead to reach out and minister to those who need it most? Don't worry, Leading LDS is here to help. Go to leadinglds.org/ministering book and you can get a free copy of my book called A Culture of Ministering, Leading the Relief Society and Elders Quorum to Minister Unto His People. This book isn't just about ministering, it's about how to lead the ministering effort in your Relief Society or Elders Quorum. Again, visit leadinglds.org/ministering book to get a free copy for you or your favorite leader. Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org.
Hello, everyone out there in Leading LDS land. This is Warner Hunter from Payson, Utah. Leading LDS has been an integral part of how I run my Elders Quorum presidency and, as a result, our ward's Elders Quorum. I have found Leading LDS podcasts and articles that are relevant to most situations I have faced in my calling thus far. Kurt and the team at Leading LDS do a great job of putting out topics and materials that are relevant to the culture and issues that us leaders in the church face on a day-to-day basis. I couldn't imagine doing this calling without having Leading LDS as a resource to fall back on. Thank you to Kurt and Leading LDS. Thank you for helping me become a leader and not just a calling.
Hello, this is another episode of the Leading LDS Podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham, and I will be your host. Today, we have the opportunity to talk with Michael Leonard and Steve Hitz, who are part of an organization called Launching Leaders. And maybe some of you are familiar with the really dynamic, awesome program that's reaching the edges of the earth to help the rising generation, or some may classify as the millennial generation, to develop as leaders in this world and be more ready to face the world. And I was turned on to this program by some listeners in my audience, and I'm sure grateful that they did that. I was able to connect with Michael, who's the executive director of Launching Leaders. They're a nonprofit organization similar to Leading LDS. And he sent me their book, Launching Leaders, which you can find in most Desert Books and obviously easily online. And it is fantastic. I'm so excited to introduce you to them and their curriculum. And that's really the essence of what they provide, is a fantastic curriculum to help those in the rising generation develop as fantastic leaders. And this is, I know for sure, will blossom into a really awesome relationship with Leading LDS and Launching Leaders, that we can help a lot of YSA bishoprics and to implement some of these principles and teachings and curriculum in their local units. I think it's well worth a listen. If you know a YSA bishop, you definitely want to forward this information onto them so they can listen and benefit from this conversation. In the beginning of the conversation, we just talk about Launching Leaders, how it was started, what the overall mission is. And then the last part of the conversation, we talk about some common principles that they teach to the rising generation to help them develop, and really fantastic content. So here is my interview with Michael Leonard and Steve Hitz. Today, I'm sitting down with Michael Leonard and Steve Hitz from Launching Leaders. How are you two?
Fantastic.
Awesome. Steve, should we start with you? Are you the founder of Launching Leaders?
I am one of the founders of Launching Leaders. There are three others that helped to found the organization, which started in 2008 and was born actually on the BYU Hawaii campus.
Wow. Were you there in Hawaii?
I was there. I was actually there working with my mentor who ran the entrepreneurial department there. His name is Jim Ritchie. And yeah, my wife and I were actually set to serve a 2-year stint with him in the entrepreneurial center. And the night before we signed the lease, I got a call from my stake president and said, "Hey, what would you think about being a YSA bishop?"
Nice.
And so he asked Ginger to leave the car. She left the car. He interviewed me. He asked me to leave the car. She came in. He interviewed her. This is all on the phone. He's
nice.
In the States, right?
Uh-huh.
And so we told Brother Jim, sadly, that we needed to go and accept another assignment, which turned out to be the absolute love of our life.
Yeah. Fulfilling calling, for sure.
Right.
And what about you, Michael? What's your background? How did you get involved with Launching Leaders?
So I actually worked for the church for a number of years in New York City, running the public affairs office there. And since then, I've been an entrepreneur and worked in higher education for a number of years. But I got to know Steve and Launching Leaders a few years ago when I got involved as a speaker for the course and also a mentor and a judge in a former version of the course. Love the principles that we've taught and got involved a few years ago, now about 3 years ago, when we felt that it was time to take the course beyond its original roots and bring it much more broad into a multi-faith, multi-denominational environment where we could provide the course to Christian groups, but also other denominations and faiths, including Muslims, Hindus, etc., and help them move forward in their lives too. And so that's when I joined the organization full time, and I'm the executive director now, and we have a great time spreading the good word of helping young adults empower their lives all across the world.
Yeah, I bet. So it started out as a course. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And this course was being taught just at like BYU Hawaii, and then it sprung from there?
That's right. It was being taught many of the principles at BYU Hawaii, and then we decided that we need to encapsulate all these principles and put them between covers. And so I wrote the book and helped a lot with the curriculum, and Mike got involved, and we took it online, and that's how it is today. It's an online course.
Yeah.
The 12 classes that they can take in any length of time that they want, and accessible all over the world.
Yeah. So what I see with most like leadership organizations, obviously they turn into a consulting group, you know, they write the book and then they travel the world to different corporate executive teams and consult that way. Was that ever, I mean, what led you in the direction of, because it's a nonprofit and you have a higher purpose than just consulting. Was there a pivot point there, or was that ever the intention of just being, let's do leadership consulting to corporations?
No, what I love about the founders and what they felt to do is that their entire emphasis is to give back and to help the new generations find their faith in the leadership principles that we teach. And so if you think about it in this way, many young adults and others are looking for the next step in their lives. They're looking for, what am I intended to do? And the course encapsulates a number of leadership principles that you would probably find in other places, but the key difference is that it's all driven by faith and belief. And so when we talk about identifying your core values, making a plan for your life, finding mentors, those are all augmented by and include your faith in that process. Mm-hmm. Whatever your faith is, it doesn't have to be LDS or Catholic or Mormon or Jewish or whatever.
Yeah.
It can be any faith. We encourage them, and we believe this is part of spreading the light of Christ around the world, to embrace the goodness that is in them and embrace their own faith to move forward with the things that we teach.
Nice. Love that. And so there's always been this faith component to it. And that's where it was obviously not a fit for a corporate setting. You couldn't walk into Google or IBM and bring faith into the discussion, which is so important. Obviously, we're preaching to the choir here, but that's an important aspect of this whole model.
Well, the fact is that many people struggle with their faith, and they're just deciding which direction to go. And we want to help address that. Mm-hmm. Young adults, others who may wonder about the practice that they grew up with and whether that was for them, we want to help them discover it and empower them to do that. This is not a course about telling them what to do. It's not a course about pushing them or pulling them. But rather, it's a course about coming alongside them and helping them discover it themselves. In fact, Steve is wonderful and expert on the whole concept of coming alongside them. And Steve, maybe you ought to comment on that. You're the man here.
Well, let me say how that phrase came about. It came about, from mingling with other faiths, and that's a term that they frequently use, come alongside. But the practicality of that came to me one day when we were herding some of our cows from one pasture to another.
You're from Wyoming, right? This is.
I grew up in Wyoming and live in okay. Colorado now.
Oh, that's right.
So cows are a part of my DNA.
Nice.
And if you get right behind the herd of cows and just try to push them, they just do circles and go everywhere but where you want them to go. But if you get out to the side of this herd and they can see you from the corner of their eye, but you're not really pushing them. They will walk with you anywhere. Yeah. And so the theme, then the approach come alongside is what we like. With our rising generation, I kind of view this as we're linking arm in arm. We're learning from each other. We're not pushing. You're not receiving this in a hierarchical manner. It's something that you discover as you go.
Yeah. Isn't that a great anecdote for church leadership in the LDS church that, you know, nobody wants to be the leader that's standing behind pushing, nor, I mean, sometimes we are ambitious and want to get in front of them and say, follow me, I'm the great leader. But it's more about walking alongside each other, because the next week or the next year, it may be somebody else is walking alongside us as our leader, right? So going back, Steve, with your history, you were called as you're in Hawaii and about to start this one assignment. Then you were thrown a curveball, and now you're a YSA bishop. Was this curriculum developed at that time, or what role did that play with you serving as a bishop while thinking about this curriculum?
You know, it was in development, everything that we were doing. And as a matter of fact, my YSA ward was we used the principles and actually ran the first class in Colorado with 45 of my ward.
And this is in Fort Collins?
In Fort Collins, Colorado. And it was so empowering. We learned a lot from that experience. And so, you know, the things that are true are true. You know, the principles that we live reside within us, right? We incorporated those things into our little ward. Mm-hmm. We called it the Great Spring Creek Ward, not just the Spring Creek Ward, because these young adults were being empowered.
Wow, that's fantastic. So obviously it started with a curriculum, some classes, then you wrote the book. And now what's the day-to-day look like for this, for launching leaders as far as accomplishing your mission?
Well, our mission is to empower the next generations. That's really it. We want to help them find and discover their future and put their hands in the hand of God to do it. Our day-to-day is simply we reach out to various faith groups, interfaith organizations, as well as our own faith to offer the course worldwide. A lot of networking that we do. Young single adult ward bishops, stake presidents. We're in New Zealand. We're in South America coming up soon in Brazil. We're in the United States, in Africa. And this is all largely by word of mouth that people find out about the course. The church does wonderful work, and we see ourselves as sort of an ancillary to what the church is doing with the self-reliance program and other things. Mm-hmm. We don't replace that, or we don't take over from that, but rather we target a specific group, young adults, young single adults, etc., and we give them a course that empowers them in a way that's very accessible to them. Multimedia, online, handheld device, interactive exercises, the ability to discover it for themselves. And in the best use of the course, the young adults watch the online course, do the exercises, but then come together as a group in a community sort of setting and meet together once a week, once every other week, depending on how they want to do it, and they apply what they've learned together. And that's where the real power comes in. Say they're identifying their core values. This is one that a lot of them really focus on. How do I identify what I value and what's important to me? They discuss it in a group setting. They apply it. They think about, well, how does that relate to my faith and my belief? And they discuss that together. They can do that in an LDS environment, but they can do that in a multi-faith environment. We were just with a group last night that was made up of multiple faith groups. And we had a rich discussion, no matter what their faith or belief background was. It didn't matter what it was. What mattered was that they were working on their personal plans, and then they would apply their own faith to it. And they'd say, well, what do you think about that? How does that apply to you and your faith and belief? And they would discuss it in an open forum without concern about religious dogma or differences in belief structure or background or interpretation of scripture. That didn't matter. What mattered was the common element that we have in humanity and our beliefs in our own faith and our own God, however that's manifest. And that was a really powerful, powerful experience.
And Mike, can you share a little bit about the facilitation, how these groups actually work? Because that's different. the way we do it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to hear.
Happy to do that. So in the early phases of this course, many years ago, it was taught by one individual in a classroom up in front as a common traditional way of doing it. We learned over the years, and after, frankly, having a great experience with an interfaith group in Manchester, England, that young adults want to be facilitated and discussed with young adults. And that's probably one of the key findings that we have, is that someone who takes the course can actually be a facilitator in the course at the same time. They don't have to be a teacher up in front of the group. Rather, we give them all the materials that they need to discover things themselves, to discover how to find mentors and to adopt mentors. But then they bring it together in the group setting and they discuss it together. And facilitators who are of their same age range is figuring it out themselves too. So it's not a teaching situation that we have in these classrooms, but it's a facilitated learning situation, learning.
Like you said, you could compare it to our self-reliance initiative that we have going, that there's not necessarily a teacher there, but there's maybe somebody that's urging the discussion forward, but everybody's part of that discussion.
Very similar to that, but the key difference is that with a young adult group, we feel strongly that a young adult needs to be facilitating a young adult.
Yeah.
Because they will confide in one another. They'll talk with one another. They'll share their life's concerns with one another. And then as a result, they'll hopefully pray and ask our Heavenly Father as they gain this enlightenment.
Yeah.
And it actually assists in their own conversion process.
Yeah, there's a mutual understanding there, right?
Exactly.
That they're not being lectured to.
Exactly.
So what is the typical scenario? I mean, as far as somebody discovering you and thinking, okay, I need launching leaders in my area. Maybe it's a Christian pastor. They just find you online. And then, like you said, there's online, would you describe them as modules that people go through and then they have a group experience later?
So we offer the course in a couple of ways. First, anyone can come online and take the course individually, anywhere around the world. If you come online and take the course individually, then you're going to pay our minimal fee. It's $99. But if you come in as a group, we have arrangements with faith groups to have a special giving back opportunity from us to take the course at no charge. So if a group wanted to organize, for example, they simply contact us through our contact us page on our website and we start a group with them. It becomes their responsibility to find the participants, to have a facilitator selected, to organize and have a location. But we provide the curriculum material all as free of charge to faith groups as part of our effort to give back and to help the next generations. And so really, if you think of it as we have a free side that's for faith-based organizations and groups, and a paid side where you're paying tuition, say, for example, with a college or university or a sort of professional application of the program, then you would pay for it. But it really depends on the experience that you'd want to have.
Probably 99.9% of our participants are faith-based and receive this free of charge. And we network with various other faith groups, like the United Religions Initiative, kind of a United Nations Episcopal group in 100 countries, Catholic groups, and so on. So we network with a lot of those faith groups to get the word out.
So as you approach these faith groups, and I'm even thinking in the context of, you know, LDS faith groups, what's the sale there? I mean, I would imagine some would say, well, you know, we've got the Bible, you know, we have Sunday schoolers. We talk about the leadership of Christ, you know, that obviously, which is very powerful. So what need are you fulfilling, or as you approach them, how do you sell that to them?
I'm not sure I go with the, and I understand where you're coming from. You know, how do you get them to embrace and discover this?
That they say, yes, let's definitely implement this.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, one of the aspects is to review and vet the course before you jump in, or to learn as you go. But there are so many things that, you know, the rising generation, they're not really coming to church anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, 60 to 70% don't come to church. And so that outreach isn't as valid as it used to be. But we speak their language in the curriculum. You know, we say, come alongside. And so they can be invited. And as they participate, even from the very first step, they realize that, hey, I'm not being preached to here. No one's trying to fix me. Because that's not the purpose of launching leaders. We don't try to fix them. We come alongside them and we celebrate their virtues and we're empowered together.
Let me give you an example of how groups come together. We're part of a partnership with an organization called the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation. Brian Grimm is the president, and Brian is all about spreading religious freedom all over the world and connecting that to business and showing how business is actually enhanced when they support religious freedom. Brian travels the globe and meets with and consults with all sorts of faith groups all over the world. Well, we're his partner, and as part of his program, he has what's called the Empowerment Plus program, and we're the lead course in that program. So we provide curriculum to existing networks that are on lots of places around the world. Steve mentioned the United Religions Initiative. That's based out of California. And they're in over 100 countries. And their objective is to help people of faith and others cooperate with one another in a spirit of peace and cooperation and understanding that they might move themselves forward and minimize religious division and all that sort of thing. Well, what's a natural network for our program. And so we're starting now in Africa, in various African countries, with United Religions Initiative, supplying them curriculum to their network throughout those countries. And so they're organizing in Rwanda, in Uganda, in South Africa, in other places in African countries with existing networks, and we provide the curriculum to them.
Awesome. Love that. So they have the structure, you give them the engine, and away they go.
Right? Exactly. And that's what's been our best model. We're also partnering with another interfaith organization in Australia. There's a center there at Griffith University that focused on interfaith work. And they're actually partnering with us to offer it through their networks. And so we provide curriculum, for example, to our faith here, too. In various networks.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking in a Latter-day Saint context, you know, a YSA ward context. Like you said, I think many YSA ward bishoprics have the same concern as other faith leaders that, man, this rising generation, the millennials or however you want to categorize it, we're losing them. You know, they're, and even in your book, you talk about the religious nuns, right? That's N-O-N-E, that don't have, that don't connect themselves to any religion whatsoever. And so they're looking for maybe a middle ground to meet people and say, well, let's talk about these principles because we all want to develop as great leaders in life or successful individuals. And so I would imagine like a YSA ward could maybe implement this type of curriculum on a Wednesday night and say, hey, bring your friends. This isn't like a Sunday school lesson. This isn't an overbearing fireside, but we're going to get together and talk about these principles in this book that do involve faith, but it's not this overbearing message, right?
Right. That's exactly right. Yes. They don't want to be preached to. Most of us don't want to be preached to, but they really love to learn and learn about things that will make a difference in their lives and that will allow them to make a difference in the world.
Awesome.
You know, so it works very well in the YSA wards on a Wednesday or Thursday night together and talk about these things. And
yeah. Or I'm even thinking, family home evening activity. Sometimes there's too many, let's decorate sugar cookies and do this indirect speed dating. Heaven forbid we get the group together and talk about, you know, anchoring principles of life, right? Anything else as far as the structure, the purpose of launching leaders that would be helpful to add before we sort of move on to some of the principles found in your book?
From my experience, it really takes a leader who recognizes the need to engage young adults in these principles. Question always comes up in an LDS environment, you know, where does this come from and why is it, why should we pay attention to it? There are lots of leadership programs out there, and that's true. Some of the evidence that we would present is that the book is distributed through Deseret Book. Our curriculum has been part of a network of church programs through LDS Business College. We're working with other universities within the church education system. The course is currently taught in a version at LDS or at BYU Idaho and here at LDS Business College. And so while we're a private nonprofit organization, we're very much aligned and in partnership as a third party with church programs that are and very much in line with doctrinal principles. And so if you think of it in terms of what can we do to help the rising generation and some of the struggles that they have, or some of the things that they're just trying to accomplish in their lives. Some may be very, very ensconced in the gospel, but just struggling with direction and how to move forward. Some may be moving forward, but just need that extra push to embrace their faith. If those are the kinds of issues that leaders are facing, they ought to consider and come and take a look at our course, and we'll give them a free look at the course and decide if they'd like to implement it. We don't advertise. We don't advertise to priesthood leaders. We can't do that. We're not going to market to them.
That circus, yeah.
but we do this by word of mouth, and we've found that especially in places like New Zealand and here in the United States and African countries, and like I said, soon to be released in Brazil, it's just a great, great venue to embrace and engage these young adults who need this sort of thing.
So let's pivot maybe into some of the principles that you discuss in the book. I want to talk to the YSA bishopric audience out there who, as you know, Steve, that one of the best, in my opinion, the best calling in the church is being bishop. And I'm sure there's an extra cherry on top when you're a YSA bishop because you get to interact with such a dynamic generation, right?
That's right.
That are in an exciting point of life. I worry about those bishops who they get called as a YSA bishop. They are excited about it. They love what the gospel has done for them, especially the ordinances. And they know that, okay, this group of people are at a point that they need to step forward towards the ordinance of celestial marriage. And so unintentionally, you become sort of this marriage salesperson that, okay, let's talk about marriage this week and this angle. How about this? Have you dated yet? Who's going to date this weekend, right? And the rising generation does not respond well to that, right? And so, but you take that away, it's like, well, what do I do? Because we're losing this rising generation. They don't seem to come. You know, I want to engage, like you said, Michael, but, you know, I have put on a weekly church service. I'm trying to engage, but it's not working. So what are some principles we talk about? Or what comes to mind as I ask that long question?
You know, I think that you allow a space for faith and you allow them to discover that on their own terms. You know, you don't necessarily preach it. Now, keep in mind that I believe that all the truths that are taught in anything we do, including launching leaders, are centered in universal truths that God has presented to us, particularly through his Son. And so with that in mind, you know, we're not recreating the wheel when we talk about these principles, but we're inviting them to create this space where they can understand and develop these things. Let me give a couple of examples. We assume too much when we look over a YSA congregation and believe that they've arrived with faith. Mm. Well, how do you develop that faith? We have something in the curriculum called the cycle of spiritual guidance. And the first step in that pattern is to discover your true identity. Well, these kids were taught from primary age, many of them, that I am a child of God. Truth is, for many of them, that's about all that they know, is that phrase. And they haven't really connected through the process of understanding their true divine nature. And so I think there's a process that they can go through to discover that, which then becomes the center of everything that they develop. You know, if you understand your true identity, it's much easier to develop your core values because they'll stem from that and so on. You know, you'll adopt mentors that are aligned with who you know now that you really are. And so don't assume, YSA bishoprics, that these things are just known. They're not known. They have to be discovered. And I think that they can prayerfully approach that. Think about a prayer where you're saying, you know, dear Heavenly Father, help me to understand truly the nature of our relationship and how I fit into all of this. I don't think that prayer is offered very often, but I can promise you that prayer is answered.
Yeah, that's powerful. Because a lot of times and you talk about that you can't assume that they're arriving in faith, and it's easy to assume that because 3/4 of the congregation are returned missionaries. What do you mean they're not arriving with faith, right? And maybe they could have arrived with that faith right off the airplane, right? But this is a different world we live in as far as that experience after they get off that airplane from their mission, right?
That's right.
And helping them start this the cycle of spiritual guidance that, that you talk about?
Think about some of the pressing issues that even the church is addressing now with anxiety in the youth and all of us really, and depression and those sorts of things. And how much of that would be resolved if people could really understand their true identity and have that so, you know, inculcated into their DNA that, you know, I think those other things subside as that becomes a true understanding.
Yeah, it's powerful. Steve, you mentioned this idea of congruency. And that's, when I think leadership or Latter-day leadership, the first word that comes to mind is not congruency, but what can we learn, especially in the YSA context, of the importance of congruency as for this rising generation?
The rising generation have come to know a concept called compartmentalization, and they truly believe, even in the LDS world, that, and you'll see it, you'll see that they'll say, okay, I can have my life at church, my life at work, you know, my life at home, and they can actually all be different, you know. And when I show up to church, I'm a saint, you know. And when I go out the rest of the week with my buddies, I can just be something else. Well, you see it on Facebook, for example. You know, lots of times we would be reviewing Facebook dialogue with some of our YSA members. It's like, holy cow, that doesn't seem like the person that I know, or the person that has presented themselves in church. And so what we have found is that this idea of, we call it beware the double life, meaning congruency, how can that be presented to change lives? And what they're discovering is that, you know what, I'm so much happier and I have so much more peace when I am the same person at work, at school, at church, at home. And I'm living out of the center of who I am. And the center of who I am, I know now because I've discovered my true identity. And I'm going to live that authentic life in every phase of my life. That's a big deal, I think, for not only the young adults, but I think that is probably the challenge that every human being has for their entire life.
Hmm. It's having that congruency through all angles of life or in all contexts of life.
Right.
And I might just add, when you couple that congruency with the faith and belief in God and align yourself with God, everyone's individual. Everyone has their own individual unique talents, abilities, ways of running their lives. But if you are truly a congruent person and you have a belief in God and you align yourself with God and embrace your individuality in the process and become who you are, we were talking with a group just last night, this interfaith group that I talked about, and a young man from, I believe he was from India, talked about that chapter, that class in the course being highly impactful for him because he realized that he was sort of putting on a show at work and being a different person at home and in other contexts, and it just rung true with him that he was not really being true to himself and true to others, that he needed to change that. And that brought him more in line with his own beliefs and his own belief structure and his own belief in God. And that's powerful. That's powerful discovery for lots of people, young or old, to make.
And it's not that these individuals are, you know, embezzling money or a criminal Monday through Friday, and then they show up and act saintly. Yeah. But it's just, and I see it in myself as well, and I think leaders see this, especially. Well, I mean, it's in the human nature culture, but it's manifest in obvious ways in the Latter-day Saint culture, especially when you're called as a leader. If I'm, you know, when I served as a bishop, I sort of felt like, okay, I have to be Mr. Smiley and Mr. Plastic on Sunday and, you know, love everybody. But sometimes it's helpful to step back and say, okay, that's not congruent with who I really am. I can be myself, and that's going to be more effective, just being myself, than acting like something I'm not.
But let's not mistake, though, to be congruent does not mean that you're not striving. Not striving to move forward and to, you know, if you're, one of your aims is truly to be happy, then you sort of have to act that part, too.
Right.
And so it's very much a embracing who you are, but also embracing who you want to become as you embrace your faith in the process.
Okay. So what are some steps that you take with maybe a group of the rising generation that to help them identify this principle or get more real with who they are and project that more consistently in their life?
Well, they can. I think they can start by asking themselves, you know, some questions that go along with this concept. You know, how am I living my life? I'll give you. I'll give you an example that Mike and I had, of where we were. You know, this work that we're involved in is non-proselytizing, and so as we work with the interfaith groups in the beginning, especially, we didn't broadcast that we were members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Sure.
In fact, we kind of, you know, kept that on the low down, particularly when we were discussing, you know, some of the evangelical groups. We took a trip to North Carolina. They call it the belt buckle of the Bible Belt. And we met with four or five different pastors all at one time. That was organized by a key pastor in the area. And he loved, you know, the curriculum, everything about launching leaders. They wanted to implement it with their youth. And for 2 days, he kept asking us, you know, what faith are you? And we said, well, we have the opportunity to, you know, worship in many venues, which we do. We really enjoy, you know, worshiping with other folks as well as our own. And then about an hour before we left, he looked at us again. He said, I have to know, where do you go to church? And I kind of was still hedging. And Mark said, we belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he looked at us and he said, oh, that changes everything.
Oh, no.
And so we left Charlotte, and they decided not to move forward at the time, you know, with the program.
And you assumed it was because of that last reason.
It was because. And then he sort of chastised us, and rightly so, for you should have been more forthright with that. You should have told me before you ever came, you know. And so since that time, with every other group, we say, oh, just so you know, these principles are faith-based and apply to really every faith, but we are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And now the response is, oh, that's fantastic. We really have a lot of respect for your faith. And so we have that mutual commonality of faith were we congruent? Was, you know, in the first part of that, when if we were really congruent and authentic, we would have been forthright immediately with who we were and where we were coming from.
Nice. And by owning it straight up in the beginning, it was less of a hindrance later on when they felt like they're not telling me the whole story here, or right.
Well, and we have, don't get it wrong, we have lots of great evangelical friends.
Yeah.
In fact, our book, the foreword to our Christian version of the book, is written by a evangelical professor at Denver Seminary. It's endorsed by one of their leading scholars. So we've got lots of evangelical friends. I think the point Steve is making is that we endeavor to live these principles, and we learn from that experience that we can talk about our faith and others can talk about theirs, and they'll embrace it or not, depending on what their feelings are and how they approach it. And so we just let them know. And if they want to partner, great. If they don't, they have a bias or concern, then we go on.
Yeah, sure. It's like all things, right? So what's the formula?
So the formula was developed by one of the founders, Jim Ritchie, and he developed it over a course of many years of his life. And it stemmed from his three teachings he received from Elder David B. Haight, who was his mission president, and J. Paul Getty. Kind of opposite, you know, individuals.
I'm not familiar with J. Paul Getty.
He was an oil tycoon.
Oh, okay. Not a Latter-day Saint.
Just right. He wasn't a Latter-day
successful
Saint.
Businessman.
Very successful. One of the richest men on the earth at the time.
Wow.
And he had a couple of things that he felt made him successful, which was to get up early, work hard, and find oil.
Makes sense.
And David B. Haight, Jim gleaned from him, get your education and make your mark and give back. So he combined those things to get up early, work hard, get your education so that you can find your passion in life, find your oil. That way you can make your mark and give back. And so this formula is really popular, very well accepted in the Launching Leaders program. The getting up early part, surprisingly, is like a new discovery for many of the rising generation. It's like, oh, wow. Well, what does that do? You know, it allows for that quiet time and that connection, you know, for your daily mindfulness or your daily devotional, which then connects you to developing your core values, which all of it connects to discovering your true identity, and then the cycle, you know, continues. So it's really important. Interestingly, we had a group in Fiji that took you know, that participated in the course, but they asked if they could have, if they could teach this in the school, you know, early in the morning. And the school said, well, like, I guess, you know, these students aren't doing so well anyway, so what can it hurt? And so a group of Latter-day Saints gathered early in the morning, and they took the Launching Leaders course in the Fiji High School. And by the and one of the real discoveries for them was they had to get up, some of them, at 3:30 or 4 in the morning to accomplish this. This is an island. You know what island life is like, right?
Yes.
It's usually not get up early.
Yeah, right. Take it as it comes, right?
So they did this. And over the course of this time, they excelled. They found all these principles that became alive within them. And the result, you know, was that they finished with the highest GPA scores in the entire country of Fiji. Hmm. And they attributed it to these things like the formula that changed the way that they lived their life.
So with this, in this story, they like put a program together that students would wake up at a certain time every day. Is that?
Well, they had to teach it before school began, sort of like early morning seminary. Sort of like a class before early morning seminary.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so would they require this class, or they would say, we're doing this if you'd like to?
No, it wasn't required, but the school authorized it to be taught there and to give it a test.
Nice. And so it wasn't necessarily, I mean, I'm sure what the principles they were teaching during that time were helpful, but just the action of getting up early and engaging with the day earlier was how it all began. Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, well, I'm not a morning person though. What do you say? What are those that they just really struggle with? And is it, are you just trying to influence people to wake up early, or is there more to it?
That's a fair question. Yeah.
I think the point of getting up early is that young adults and others discover that there's very productive time in the morning. Steve talks a lot about daily mindfulness or paying attention to your devotions.
Yeah. So everyone has to develop or should develop their own form of daily mindfulness, or, you know, that time alone that they have. And it just so happens that most people don't have time, you know, unless they make the time. And so where are they going to make the time? Often it's early in the morning before they start their day and other things. And 30 minutes of that type of exercise every day that you can, you know, your daily devotional might include, you know, exercise, listening to music, reading good books, prayer, meditation, you know, all those things are a part of this daily mindfulness. And, you know, it just adds a dimension to life that is typically not found in any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you find in your courses, I mean, the millennials respond well to that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some still struggle, but
it's hard for, they will express oftentimes how hard it was, you know, to get up, you know, an hour earlier than they normally do. But it kind of becomes habitual. And once they're in that mode, they wouldn't change it. And then they start talking about what it added to their life, just that one little step.
Yeah.
I love the comment that we had from one who was participating in Buenos Aires. She said, the day is so much longer now.
Imagine that, right? That's great. And I think routine plays into a lot as well, because if you just get up early and you don't really necessarily have steps or a plan in front of you of what to do, like exercise or read or do this, it's easy just to sort of plop on the couch and then suddenly you fall asleep on the couch. Right. And for the record, I woke up at 5 o'clock today. So hopefully I'm implementing this principle as well. But it is true. And I'm categorized myself as quite the morning person. But man, those morning hours, there's a sacred feeling in the air when you're up and,
like,
and engaging with the day early on. That's fantastic. Anything else as far as the formula is concerned? I'm sure, obviously, with the formula, there's probably quite dynamic.
Well,
but
one thing that we've learned from the rising generation, this aspect of doing all these things so that you can give back. You know, in the older generations, it used to be, well, they'd live this life and incorporate all these things, and someday they could give back, you know, which might mean a mission, which might mean, you know, being a large, you know, making a large donation to something. But the rising generation has figured out that giving back is something that they want to do every day. Hmm. And it doesn't necessarily require or involve monetary aspects. It can be helping someone, mentoring, smiling at someone at the store that you just feel, you know, that this needs that smile to brighten their day. There's all kinds of ways that we talk about to give back, but they taught those things to us. you know, and we recorded them in the Teach.
Yeah, that's great.
Can I tell a little story on
that? Yeah, I'd love to.
So we were working with a group that was very diverse in various parts of the world, and they were participating in the course by taking the online course and then meeting together by Skype. And they were from everywhere, from Eastern Europe to Sudan to South America, the United States, et cetera, all meeting together as a group. And a young Muslim individual, he's actually in his early 30s, had three or four children in Sudan, living on the equivalent of about $800 US a month for his family, said, "I've always struggled with financial fitness and how to take care of myself financially. And once I read the financial fitness chapter in the book, it helped me understand how I could manage and plan. And what I'm getting to is that he discovered a way that he can give back even on $800 a month to his mosque and to his family members to help them. The meager living that he had, it was so important to him, this millennial aged individual, to give back, that he was willing to do that even on that small amount. That's the power of giving back in young people's lives today. They want to do it now, not wait till the future."
Yeah. And I would imagine that's sort of a tough paradigm to get them out of, because you think of, well, yeah, I'll give back because right now I'm establishing myself, I'm in my career, and then someday I'll be rich and then I'll write checks then, you know, to give back. But to really shift that and say, no, it's important that you give back today in some form. And it doesn't always have to be writing checks, right?
Well, this is something we've learned from them. We didn't teach them this. We learned this from them and learned of the power of giving back and the stage of life to do it. And that's sort of our key learning from them, from the younger generations, which is really valuable.
So some of these principles have organically surfaced just through engaging with this demographic.
Yeah, that's the come alongside principle.
Yeah, perfect example. There's a chapter in the book about mentorship, and I think this is becoming a lost art to some extent. And I think, you know, decades and centuries ago where apprenticeships were more common, and maybe this mentorship was more well-founded. But, and I think in a YSA word context, I would imagine your experience, Steve, that sometimes you felt like not only am I a mentor, but I have to be a mentor to these every person in this 100 or so congregation. But what can you speak to as far as helping the rising generation leverage the principle of mentorship?
So important. And this is something that we also learned, you know, largely from them. It used to be in the early stages of the program, we would gather a group of what we thought would be great mentors, and we would then assign the mentors, you know, to the participants kind of based upon what we thought would be a match, right? And sometimes that worked, but oftentimes it was like, oh, great, you assigned me a mentor, you know.
His name's Bill. All right. Now what?
So what we learned is that, hey, you know what? It's more important that they find and adopt their own mentors. And so we teach the principles of how to do that and things to be aware of, you know, because there are some dangers, you know. They might have a particular thing that they're working on. They are looking for a mentor. But so many, there's groups of mentors that are individuals that would take advantage of that situation. You know, oh, let's do this and you can be in my downline.
Right. There's a business angle to it.
Right. Sort of a mentality. And so we teach them those cautions, and then they do find and adopt their own mentors. And oh, what a difference that makes. You know, and mentors aren't just individuals. They can be great books, you know. Things that we can learn through other means.
Yeah.
Well, you're an example of that. You're providing podcasts to people to enrich their lives. Well, that's a form of mentorship.
Mm. Yeah. And so what would you say to a bishop who's maybe meeting with somebody regularly who's really just struggling in life and he thinks, you know, this person really needs a mentor? Where would you encourage them to start to find a mentor? Like, do you start calling successful executives? And
well, first, one of the first steps is to be bold. You know, I'll give you an example of my mentor of 40 years. He arrived and it was Jim Ritchie. He arrived in Southern California at the age of 35, retired with his 8 children.
Oh, I'm 36 and retired, but you know, no, I'm just kidding. Wow.
And so I just observed him for a little while. I thought, oh man, And then I forced myself to come out of my comfort zone because I'm not really that social of a person, even in church. Yeah. And I walked up to him and say, Brother Richie, I'd really like to get to know you. You know, do you think I could have that opportunity? And so he invited me to, he allowed me to adopt him as a mentor. And so he had a motorhome at the time. And every Saturday morning, I would go over to his motorhome, would sit inside his motorhome out in front of his house. He would read the paper and he would look over his paper from time to time and give me a marching order. Go read The Richest Man in Babylon. You know? Go read the Greatest Salesman in the World. I'd do these things and come back and report. He was mentoring me and in a way that, you know, is very effective, but it was very, but I adopted him, you know, and no one assigned me, no one assigned him to be my mentor. So that over the course of our lives, we incorporated those things that he taught us, my wife and I. And then we ended up being invited back to BYU Hawaii to present kind of our story, right? He didn't realize that we were going to be presenting this idea of mentorship and the things that he taught us and that we incorporated in our lives. And at the end of the presentation, he had tears streaming down his face. He said, it really works. It really works.
Wow.
And so finding and adopting your own mentors and finding the value in that is something that the Rising Generation helped teach us, but that we, you know, is so important in life.
Yeah. And so I love that. Just you got to be bold and ask for
ask,
it.
Ask.
Right. Yes. And it's not that you can nonchalantly or passive aggressively just start hanging out with this guy and be like, why are you always calling me? Like, what is with this? But to create that relationship and say, no, I want to learn from you. I want to pick your brain from time to time and really benefit from this relationship.
And I think we don't need to limit ourselves to the old model of mentorship either, and that we need to find someone, go sit down and have breakfast with them and have a regular meeting every month sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It can be as creative as you want it to be. It can be through social media, it can be email, it can be chat or texting, it can be any sort of medium. I don't care what the medium is, as long as you make that connection and invite them to help you, to mentor you. Most people like to talk about themselves. Most people like to, especially if they're successful, give you some tips and some ideas. It's getting the courage to make the ask and say, can I just have a few minutes of your time? And you can do whatever medium you like. But then have that boldness that Steve talked about and make the next step. That's usually the biggest obstacle, is just making that first step and asking someone. Once you ask one and they accept, then go to the next one. If they don't accept, well, they probably weren't a good mentor anyway. So go to the next one.
Yeah.
And use whatever means that you're comfortable with. But usually some face-to-face time is good too. But we need to embrace the different methods of contacting and working with people. Again, that we've learned from the Rising Generations.
Yeah. You know, one of the greatest personal blessings of doing Leading LDS and producing podcasts like this, I get to meet with remarkable people, and it sort of establishes a relationship. And many of my past interviews, I still reach out to and say, what do you think about this? What should I do here? And it's a mentorship relationship that's really blessed my life. But there is this proactive step that must take place. That mentors don't just knock on your door and say, let me teach you, or let me give you my knowledge and wisdom, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, I was just thinking of what I would call the Messiah principle. You know, a great mentor understands that every gift that they might possibly have comes from God. And if they're really not willing to share that, what a tragedy that is.
Mm.
Because it's a gift that they received, whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
So why not try to give back in any way that you can, in a very humble way, knowing that any success something you have to share value came from God anyway.
Yeah, powerful. And in the YSA bishop context, you know, I think a YSA bishopric member could get really excited about this concept. Like, you know, I am going to be a more proactive mentor, but I would imagine it's more, you have to sort of say, well, I'm going to, you know, look at five people and see if I can interact with these five people more and engage with them more. And maybe they'll be open to that mentorship relationship, because you can't be a mentor to everybody, right?
Right. And be as bold as to just, you know, so oftentimes they go, oh, that person, you know, wow, they've really made it, and they really wouldn't have time for me or really be interested in my journey.
Yeah.
But that's so wrong. I mean, I've emailed authors, you know, of, like, I've had conversations through email with Patrick Lencioni, you know, who's a, you know, world-renowned leadership person. I could go down a list of folks. I've just been bold enough. I'm going to send an email to them, because it was in the back of their book. I don't know if they'll respond to it. It actually took 3 months for Patrick Lencioni to respond to an email where I was asking, can I use a principle that you taught, you know, and so others could learn from that in a different venue? And his response was, it took 3 months for him to respond. But when he did, it was like, well, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be delighted if you wanted to use that.
Yeah.
And we had a painting we wanted to use in the curriculum that was, it was the painting that you see of Jesus Christ creating the earth. Mm. You know, really cool picture. And I emailed the author and he said, hey, you know what? I sold the rights to that to the church, but for the purposes that you've described in using it, I'm sure that they would be delighted and they have my endorsement. And so that gave me a position to go, to the church and say, can we use this for this purpose? Well, it took a kind of a bold action to actually make those steps.
Yeah.
And that's what we encourage in mentoring.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is a principle I've been thinking a lot about. You know, the old adage, I don't know who it's accredited to, but you're the average of the five people you hang out with most. Hmm. And as I've reflected on that recently in my life, I think, okay, who are the five people? And sure, they're great people. They're typically family, and that's okay. You know, we generally hang out with our family and see our family most often. But I realize, if I'm going to raise the average of who I am, I need to be more proactive in identifying who those five people are and then reaching out and being bold with them and engaging from there. So as we wrap up here, Steve, what any general counsel that you'd have is for those YSA leaders out there that are striving to lead better and then generate more leaders in that demographic?
Sure. Here are a couple of things to consider. As I've mentioned earlier in our conversation, try to really understand on a deep level who you're dealing with, the greatest generation that has ever been sent to live upon the earth. And you get a chance to mingle with them. So look at that divine nature and really respect it. Make wise and loving invitations. Don't try to force your experiences on them as the way life should be, but help them to choose their own path. And then I would say that consider the concept of empowerment. It's an approach that allows them to discover, but I guess the word empowerment goes very close to the word edification, right? And to be empowered together for common good and to allow them the freedom to chart their own course. There's so many times that they just think that there's just a pattern that life should be lived by, right? They should maybe go to a year of college. They should, go on their mission. When they get back, they should go back to college. They should seek out their career, and then they should get a job. In the process of that, they should be married. Well, those are all good things, but it may not be the exact journey or path that God has established for them. Success, as we were taught by Elder Gay in a private meeting, is doing what Heavenly Father sent you to the earth to do. And that could be caring for a loved one who has a mental disorder, for their entire journey. And that could be your only purpose in life, the one that He sent you here to do. It could be something else. But consider that as you deal with this rising generation and each other, consider, the nature of success according, to what Heavenly Father desires us to do.
Awesome. Love that. So if there is a YSA leader or any leader out there who likes what they hear, they're excited about this curriculum, looking more into it, where should they start?
Go to our website, llworldwide.org. There are resources that you can look at immediately. You can take the first class in the course and experience that. If you want to form a group, there's an information, request information form there. It comes to us. We respond quite immediately, and we can help you form a group in your location. No question. If you're a YSA bishop, if you're a church organization, if you're going to organize as a group, we'll give it to you for free. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we give you all the materials, the online course, the book that's contained in the online course, a facilitator's guide, give you a coordinator's guide on how to organize it. So it's a sort of a turnkey package. And then the leader simply finds those who would like to participate and starts the course. They can offer it in a 6-week, a 10-week, a 12-week pattern. It depends on what they would like to do and what they find most effective. We do suggest that there'd be some length of time, not do it just in a day because we want it to stick, right? But then we give all the training that's necessary to be successful. And so it's as simple as that. Anybody, we've done it in all parts of the world. Right now it's available in English. We're moving into Portuguese, but those are the two languages right now. If someone wants to give a large donation, we'll gladly do another language.
Right. Okay.
We do work on donations since we give the course away for free. And so if there are those who would like to contribute to the cause, there's also a place on our website to do that. If they believe in the rising generation and helping them move forward in their lives, we encourage, you know, people to give. And we encourage people to give in various ways. If they know of an individual who wants, they think should take the course, by all means, go online, take a look at the first class. If you feel so prompted, then go ahead and register for the full thing and take it individually. We just exist to empower the new generations and help them move forward and embrace their faith in the process. And that's what we want to do. That's exactly what we want to do. That's our whole purpose. And it's a charitable cause, and we just hope that that we can do some good in the world and help some folks.
And our entire motivation is simply this: we love the rising generation.
That concludes my interview with Michael Leonard and Steve Hitz of Launching Leaders. Again, go check out their website at llworldwide.org. See all the information there and how to implement some of this curriculum in maybe your local YSA units. Fantastic content and information. And don't forget to visit leadinglds.org/ministering book to get your free copy of A Culture of Ministering. It's free and will change the way you lead. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.